Ladies and gentlemen, the producer-director of CBS Radio's Suspense, Mr. Anthony Ellis.
How do you do?
Mr. Ellis is also a writer. He has written today's story. It has nothing to do with suspense.
What?
It's a romantic comedy we think you'll enjoy. And we've invited Mr. Ellis to tell you this unusual story himself.
Thank you.
Now, from Hollywood, romance. Romance, transcribed stories of love and adventure, of excitement and daring do. Today, with our respects to Rudyard Kipling, The Affairs of Private Bert Johnson, narrated by Anthony Ellis, featuring Mr. Ben Wright as the redoubtable Johnson.
His name was Bert Johnson, and he was born toward the close of the last century in the East End of London. When he was 10 years old, he was large for his age and a problem. His mother looked at him and said,
Bert, you're no good. You never was no good, you never will be no good. I'm tired of you mucking about all day long. Get out and get a job, you hear?
And his father, normally a mild-mannered and kindly man, looked over his newspaper and said,
Your mother's right, son.
At the age of 10, Bert Johnson had very few choices of action. Therefore, he volunteered for the army. For some inexplicable reason, he was accepted and inducted as drummer boy. He remained in that capacity for the next 8 years until finally, the sergeant major, a red and huge man with a thunderous voice, said to him,
Johnson, you're 18 years old. You're too old to beat the drums and you're too bloody stupid to be a soldier. But I'm paid by Her Majesty to make a soldier out of you. And that's what I'm bloody well going to do. Dismissed.
And for the next 7 years, Sergeant Major Cudd did his best to make Private Johnson worthy of spilling his blood for the Queen Empress. How he accomplished this feat is more to the credit of Bert Johnson than the Sergeant Major, and this is how it happened. The regiment was stationed at Peshawar, which is near to the Afghan frontier. And it happened that the colonel's daughter was spending a summer holiday with her father. She was a tall, raw-boned, unlovely, and rather headstrong girl, and against her father's specific orders, made her way one day alone into the native city. But Johnson came upon her just as a particularly evil-looking Afghan had knocked her down and was making off with her handbag.
Here, miss, you all right?
Yes, I think so, thank you.
He get your bag?
Yes.
Well, that's a shame. You oughtn't to be down here, you know. Lost?
I suppose I am.
Well, you better stay with me then. It's not a healthy place for a young lady. Come on. Here. Didn't no one tell you about it down here?
I was warned.
Well, you should have heeded him.
I'm very grateful to you.
Ah, that's all right. Where are you staying?
With my father.
Yeah. And where's your father staying?
On the post.
Oh, you mean the regiment?
That's right. I'm Colonel Waite's daughter, Pamela.
Good. I'm done.
What?
Well, who'd have thought that old Grumble Guts had a daughter?
Are you referring to my father?
Oh, no offense, miss. Just a pleasantry, you might say. But look here, you won't say anything about me finding you, will you?
Well, I don't see why not. I'm sure he'd be very grateful to you.
Oh, not likely. I've been out of bounds for 4 days. Thought I'd make it an even 7 before I go back.
Isn't that serious?
Not half. The sergeant major will give me a month digging nasty holes for this if the old man don't have me shot. But it's been worth it.
You mean to say you've been living down here among these people?
In a manner of speaking, you might say yes.
Oh, I think we'd better move on. There's some very odd-looking men over there watching us.
Who? Oh, them? Well, there's a lot of them blokes buzzing about these days. Friends of mine say they're Shere Khan's men down from Kabul. Afghans, you know. Trouble brewing up there, if you ask me. Come on, miss.
Does my father know about the trouble, I mean?
Begging your pardon, miss, but your dad don't know nothing about what goes on out here. He's only interested in parades and more bloody parades.
I resent that.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I keep my ears open and I've got friends in Peshawar. I know what I know.
I should think it's your duty to inform your colonel, then.
Oh, Gore, that's a laugh.
If you have information, it's your duty to give it to your commanding officer. What is your name, Private?
Johnson, miss. Bert Johnson. Now, look, you won't say anything about me, will you? I mean, fair's fair, you know, after all. I saved your life, so to speak.
But have you no loyalty to the flag under which you serve? The Queen? England?
Oh, now, look, miss. I'm as loyal as the next man, and I'll tear the ears off anyone that says I'm not. Begging your pardon, miss. Oh, here you are. Now, that's the turning you take for the post. You'll be all right now. I'll watch you till you reach the gate.
You won't come with me? I'm sure my father would deal most leniently with you.
I'd rather take my chances with the Sergeant Major, miss.
Well then, Mr. Johnson, I shall say goodbye. I'm most terribly grateful for your service. I do hope we shall meet again under happier circumstances.
Likewise, I'm sure, miss. My pleasure.
Miss Wake took the big soldier's hand in hers, squeezed it gently, and then she was gone. Bert Johnson looked after a departing figure, angular, long striding, and for the first time, the despair of the regiment knew deep in his heart that he was forever and hopelessly in love. In the meantime, approaching the post gate, Miss Pamela Waite was experiencing a similar emotion. She was well aware of her physical defects and knew that men seldom looked at her twice unless they were subalterns duty-bound to pay official court. This she knew, and yearned for the romance she dreamed of finding in India. She suddenly realized that she had found it in Private Johnson.
How tall. How handsome he is. What a devil-may-care attitude. Of course he is rather common, but he's a man. Oh, what a lovely man. I must find out more about him.
And this, against Private Johnson's wishes, she proceeded to do.
I was frightfully worried, Pamela, frightfully. You must give me your word never to do such a thing again.
I'm sorry, Daddy. I promise I won't.
What was the name of the soldier who helped you? I shall wish to commend him personally.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that. He was rather afraid that you'd be displeased.
Nonsense. Who is he?
Private Bert Johnson.
Johnson?
Bert Johnson.
He's a disgrace to the regiment. He'll be court-martialed and shot if he's caught. I've had enough of Johnson. Too much of Johnson.
But, Daddy...
If he touched you, if he laid a finger on you... I'll kill him myself.
He saved my life. And perhaps even more.
He must have been drunk. Sergeant Major!
Sir?
My daughter saw Johnson a few minutes ago. I order you to take as many men as you need and bring him in.
Begging the Colonel's pardon, we have been looking.
Look harder! Find the man. I'll break you if you don't. Do you follow me, Sergeant Major?
I follow you, sir.
Now, it should be explained that the colonel was intensely proud of his regimental post. He was also proud of the Loving Cup, which he'd won 20 years earlier in a polo match in Dakar. Therefore, it is quite understandable that his fury was great when it was discovered that Private Bert Johnson had used the cup for purposes other than respectful admiration. This he had done on a bet 4 days earlier, won his bet, and disappeared with the winnings. Unfortunately, though, he'd been seen by the officer of the guard and, although not apprehended, reported to the colonel. Well, it wasn't until the end of the week that Private Johnson was seen again, and this only when he appeared at the guard post, red-eyed, dirty, and quite resigned to his fate. He was taken to the sergeant major.
Johnson, you're under arrest.
All right, old cock.
That'll cost you 5 more days on bread and water, Johnson.
Well, seeing as how the colonel's probably going to have me shot, don't make much difference, does it?
I've had enough of your lip, Johnson. Prisoner and escort, right then.
Sergeant Major, before we go, I got a bit of news I picked up the Colonel might want to hear. It's about Shere Khan.
You shut your face, Johnson. I've had just about enough out of you. Too much. Think you can make a fool out of your regiment, don't you? Not much. Prisoner and escort, by the right, quick, march! Left, right, left, right, left, right.
Bert Johnson was taken to the guardhouse and lodged in chains, while the colonel pondered over a fitting punishment for the man who had disgraced his command and desecrated his loving cup. Sergeant Major Cudd didn't see fit to accept Bert's bit of news and carry it to the colonel, which was a great mistake and one that he lived to regret. The disgrace of the regiment languished in his cell for 3 weeks and thought about the colonel's daughter. And then the startling news came.
Oi, Smith, what's up?
Hey, Lord Lummy, the old frontier's blowing up. The Afghans are taking the outposts of Lal Pura.
I could have told them that was going to happen 3 weeks ago.
That ain't off of it. That old bleeder Shere Khan's blinking well kidnapped the colonel's daughter.
Pam?
He's holding her hostage at Kabul. We're going up to try to get her.
We'll return to romance in just a moment. Beyond a doubt, the nation faces a critical shortage of scientists and engineers. Young people deciding on the courses of their futures will do well to get the facts by writing now for the free folder titled, After High School What? Write Box 40, Midtown Station, New York 18. Do it now. And now for the second act of Romance.
The entire regiment was formed in the square and addressed by a white-faced and very grim colonel. They were marching on Kabul for the honor of the empire and, not in the least, incidentally, or so the colonel hoped, the honor of his daughter. His words drifted across the camp to Private Johnson's cell, and Johnson became filled with a great fear.
Oi, Smith! Smith!
Yes? What do you want, Johnson?
I've got to talk to the colonel.
He ain't got no time to talk to you.
I got to. It's urgent. I heard what he said about the march on Kabul. He can't do it.
You balmy. What do you mean he can't do it?
Listen, they got that place armed like a ruddy pincushion. There's better than 15,000 men up there just waiting. Your regiment will be wiped up.
Gore, listen to the viceroy talking. Ain't he a bloody mob?
Now, listen, you've got to believe me, Smith. I know, I tell you. As a girlfriend of mine told me while I was in the quarter. Well, I was too drunk half the time to remember, but it all comes back to me now. That's why Shere Khan took Pam, the colonel's daughter. He wants old Grumble Guts to attack so he can finish off the regiment.
In which case, I'm grateful that you're such a valuable prisoner, because I've got to stay here to guard you and won't have me head blowed off. Go back to sleep.
The regiment marched, and they were joined by a company of Highlanders who were encamped nearby. They made a glorious sight and sound, and were most assuredly marching to their death.
Oh, my stomach, my poor stomach. Oh, Smith, help! Help, I've got an attack. Help. Ooh.
Hey, what's the matter, Johnson?
Oh, it's my stomach, Smith. Oh, the cramp, something awful.
Stomach?
Oh, I'm dying. Help me, will you? Ow.
Oh. All right, now, wait a minute. Oh. Where's it hurt, chum?
Here, right here.
Well, now, let's have a look.
I'm sorry I've got to do this, but it can't be helped. I've got to save that girl. Oh, yeah.
Nobody saw Private Bert Johnson leave the guardhouse, and Corporal Smith wasn't awake to sound the alarm. Johnson took the opposite direction to that of the regiment and went straight into the heart of Peshawar. There he found an old friend with whom he'd spent many a happy and inebriated hour. The man's name was Ayub, and he held the big English soldier in love and reverence, possibly, because several years earlier, Johnson had saved him from an irate mob bent upon skinning him alive.
Let them go. They will be killed. Then they will not return, and you and I can spend all our days together. You have many friends in Peshawar. You are not like the other English. You should have been a Kashmiri.
Well, I told you, Ayub, I'm in love with a girl. Her dad's gonna march right up to Kabul like a ruddy hero and get them all blown to blazes. Well, that's his lookout. But you know what them Afghans will do to the girl.
I do not like fighting, my friend. If I do as you ask and guide you into Kabul, I may lose my life as well as you.
Well, what do you want? You can't live forever, can you?
But for you, I would not be alive today.
All right, then.
I owe you my life.
All right.
I would do anything for you, my friend, my soul.
Ah, you're a sport, you are.
But I will not come with you to Kabul.
Well, rot your dirty eye, you call that friendship?
We will have a drink. Some of your fine whiskey that you have stolen from the colonel. And you will forget the girl.
Well, they drank for 2 hours. And at the end of it, Ayub and Private Bert Johnson were on their way to Kabul. Johnson had shrouded his large frame in robes, darkened his face, and had become a reasonable, although outsized facsimile of a tribesman. Together, they rode, singing rude Afghan songs, and giving the slow-moving regiment a wide berth, arrived 3 days later in a village a few miles from the stronghold of Kabul. Here they were welcomed by the armed advance guard of the Khan's army and given guns with which to defend the faith. It should be added that the scourge of the regiment, Private Johnson, had learned and spoke fluently 4 Indian dialects, including Afghan. After a little while, Ayub went off to learn what he could about the colonel's daughter. Darkness fell, and Johnson was waiting at the edge of a campfire when Ayub silently moved to his side.
Hello. I thought you'd copped it. What did you find out?
She is alive. Well guarded. Unless the regiment surrenders, they are going to kill her. Shere Khan has sworn this.
Well, not if I can help it.
The soldiers should arrive by tomorrow night. They say they are moving at a forced march.
We'd better get a move on, then.
But it is death. Surely she will be guarded. And inside the palace. We can never get inside.
Well, we can have a go at it. Come on.
They stole out of the Afghan camp and made their way to Kabul. The city was seething with activity, and it was an easy matter to join the throngs undetected. Hundreds of tribesmen from the north and the west were riding in at every hour to join in the war against the invaders. At that moment, in the palace, Miss Pamela Waite was giving an unwilling audience to Shere Khan, her abductor.
You alone can save your father and his regiment, Miss Waite. I give you another chance to change your mind.
You can do your worst, Shere Khan. I shall not betray my people, even though it means my life.
Oh, it will. You may rest assured of that. I shall inform the noble colonel of this, and at the first shot, your head will be removed and thrown before his feet.
I am not in the least frightened.
Well, is it not better to save your own life as well as your countrymen? If they surrender, I give you my word, not one will be harmed.
Your word? A bandit? The word of a bandit?
How very English of you.
I have nothing more to say to you. May I go to sleep now?
Of course. Good night.
She cried, partly in fear of what was to come, but mostly because she was in love with a tall, common soldier and knew that she'd never see him again. At dawn, out of sheer exhaustion, she fell asleep, and at dawn, Private Bert Johnson, although he didn't know it, strolled underneath her window with his companion, Ayub.
The way I see it, Ayub, the best way for us to get in the palace is to have a talk with the sheer bloody Khan.
You are mad.
Not me. You. You'll have a talk with him. Oh. While you're doing that, I'll have a go for the girl.
But
you're going to make up something about the regiment, see? How many guns, men, what the plan of attack is. I'll tell you how to say it so it'll sound good. And if you can keep him going for half hour, I think I can get her out.
Suppose that he does not believe me. Finds out that I am lying.
You still think you can live forever? Now, here's what you're going to say.
So, in the early morning sun, 2 tribesmen mounted the steps of the palace and told the sentry of the urgent news they carried for the Khan. 10 minutes later, after consultation, they were led by a single guard to the chief's quarters. In the corridor, they disposed of the guard and dragged him behind a curtain.
All right. I'll meet you outside the gates tonight. If I'm not there, you meet the regiment, warn the colonel what the Khan's going to do, see? Good luck, chum.
It was either a miracle of faith or love that led Private Johnson straight as an arrow to the room where his lady was being held. The guard stationed outside had only a moment to register a brief and fearful gurgle before he joined his ancestors. And then...
kindly knock before entering. What is it you wish?
Hello. Don't you remember me?
Private Johnson. Private Bert. Oh, dear.
Now then. It's all right. I'm going to get you out, see? You're going to be all right.
Oh, it's a dream.
No, it ain't. We've got to work fast or we're dead ones, both of us. It's lucky you're large-ish on size. The bloke outside ain't going to need these things. Here you are. Put them on.
There's blood on them.
That's right. Didn't do him no good. Won't hurt you. Hurry up, go.
Oh, Bert, you're quite wonderful. I want you to know that
That's the way I feel. I didn't think you would. It just in case if we don't get out, I love you. See?
I do see. Oh, indeed I do.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's have a look at you. Yes, good. Yeah, keep your face covered with this. Now, give us a kiss and let's hop it, eh?
It would perhaps be a better story to relate that Private Bert Johnson fought his way through an army of tribesmen, slashing his way for his love to freedom. But such was not the case. Miss Waite and the soldier walked out of the palace without a word being spoken to either one of them, and that night they waited in the appointed place for Iob, who met them without incident. It was only when they were within sound of the advancing regiment's pipes that the lovers spoke of their plight.
What are we going to do, Bert, about us?
Well, I'm blessed if I know. Your dad's going to have a conniption when you tell him.
I don't care. You love me?
I do.
You wish to do the right thing, to marry me?
Well, of course I do. What do you think?
Very well, then. It's settled.
Yes. You tell that to old Grumbleguts.
I will.
Which she did. The colonel was torn between righteous indignation, he had entertained far greater hopes for his daughter's future, and grateful admiration for the disgrace of the regiment, who not only had saved his only born's life, but also the lives of his men. It is to his credit that he did the only thing possible under the circumstances, and perhaps no less to the sergeant major's credit that he accepted the change with what little grace he could muster. After the wedding and honeymoon, Bert Johnson, a new, shining and responsible lieutenant in Her Majesty's Army, called Sergeant Major Cudd before him.
Sergeant Major!
Yes, sir?
Have you seen to Hayob's comforts?
Yes, sir.
You've had my wife's things taken to our quarters?
Yes, sir.
Seen to my horse?
Yes, sir.
You have the makings of a good soldier, Sergeant Major.
Thank you, sir.
However, your boots is dirty.
Now, look here, Johnson. I've had enough of you. Too much.
Sir Major, you're forgetting yourself.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
Come over, Cuddy. Let's have a drop together and forget it, eh? What do you say?
Yeah.
Romance is produced and directed by William Trug with editorial supervision by Het Mannheim. You have heard The Affairs of Private Bert Johnson, specially written and narrated for Romance by Anthony Ellis, featuring Ben Wright as Bert Johnson and Ellen Morgan as Pamela. Others in the cast were Herb Butterfield, Raymond Lawrence, Jack Crucian, Charlie Lung, Edgar Barrier, and Paula Winslow. This is Joe Walters inviting you to hear Romance transcribed next week at this same time. Starting next week, follow two solid weeks of CBS Radio saturation coverage of a subject vitally important to us all, the age of the atom. Listen for 2 weeks of special programs nightly at 10:05 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, starting next week at the Star's address. Stay tuned now for Gunsmoke, which follows immediately over most of these same stations.